Welcome to Med Practice Made Perfect, brought to you by Practice First Medical Management Solutions. My name's Tom Mahar, and I'll be your host. Welcome to Med Practice Made Perfect. My name's Tom Mahar with Practice First Medical Management Solutions in Amherst, New York. And today we are going to discuss the considerations and steps for starting your own medical practice. So, you know, the first step is choosing your entity. So really quite a few considerations here. The most important thing to remember is that you really want to have either corporate or a limited liability company protection. So when you have, you know, one of those two things, you have protection, you know, from creditors for your personal assets. So, you know, years ago, most people would set up corporations, professional corporations, which, you know, are called PCs, kind of an outmoded way to do things now, really not the best choice. Most practices that I see are using PLLCs. So those are professional limited liability companies. So depending on the state that you're in, but you can use an LLC or a PLLC. You know, in New York, you have to have a PLLC to basically get credentialed with and contracted with the carriers in New York. So the professional limited liability company process is a little bit more painful than just setting up a regular business. And the reason is that in New York, for example, you have to go through the state education licensing department, not just the division of the Department of State, Division of Corporations, but you have to go through and, you know, they have to, you know, basically make sure that, you know, the name's good and, you know, and all your credentials are good to practice, et cetera. So when you set up the PLLC, you have a couple choices. Once you decide, okay, I'm going to go PLLC rather than a corp, you know, if you go with a PLLC, you know, the other thing that you have is you have some options as to how you're going to be treated as a taxable entity. I mean, you could choose to be a corporation if you're a solo provider. You could choose to be a sole proprietor, you know, filling out a Schedule C on your tenant form 1040 and run your practice that way. If you have a business partner, then you could have that PLLC within that partnership. And then you're going to get your K-1s out of the partnership. And that's how you would claim your income from the practice. Let's assume that you go with a PLLC. You know, a few considerations here. As I mentioned earlier, you have to go through not just the Division of Corporations, Department of State, whatever it is in your location, you know, in your state, but you also have to go through the Department of Education. So, basically, what you have to do there is you can expect anywhere from a 3 to 6 month time frame to get that done. It's, you know, it can be a little bit arduous. I mean, during COVID, you know, we saw it was, you know, 9 months to a year in some cases. That's how backed up they were. Right now, we're seeing about 3 months from start to finish. So, you know, how do I set up a PLLC? Well, the best way to do this is talk to an attorney. And, you know, you got to talk to an attorney that has experience in this. So they know what they're doing. You don't want to have any missteps in this process because, you know, a lot of times there's considerations. You might be leaving an employer and you need to have it set up at a certain period of time. You know, if a mistake happens in the application, it can set you back weeks, months, that sort of thing. So you want to have someone experienced, you know, helping you through that process to complete the PLLC. Costs, you know, in the neighborhood of $1,500 plus filing fees. You have to file, you know, there's newspaper ads you got to take out. There's all kinds of requirements to set up the PLLC. So once you get that done and you get that off you, so basically you've invested a commitment of at least the $1,500 plus the filing fees to start the business. So, you know, the next step is that, you know, you've got to think about it. And you probably already thought about this is, you know, where are my patients coming from? You know, if you're a specialist, you're going to have to work on a referral base and where are the patients, you know, on letting them know that, you know, you're going to be a business under your own shingle, if you will, or group. And, you know, patients just don't show up at the door. I mean, there's all sorts of things that have to happen here. You know, you got to develop a website. Good time to start that. Decide, you know, figuring out your social presence. You know, what are you going to use? Typically for practices, you know, you're going to use Facebook. You know, depending on the type of practice you have, you know, Twitter, X, you know, that might be a good way to go. But all those things need to be set up, maintained. You have to be very careful with Facebook as far as HIPAA goes. So I'm not going to go into that on this broadcast, but you know, there's a lot of consideration there. So you want to start getting that done. The next step that you want to take, I'll call it the third step, is that, you know, you've got to identify office space. So, you know, that's not necessarily an easy thing. There's a lot of office space that's available now. That's been made available through COVID and a lot of people working remote nowadays. So a lot of spaces that maybe weren't necessarily medical offices in the past, you know, are available and can be reconfigured for, you know, medical use. So depending on the type of practice that you have, I mean, you've got to then start thinking about, okay, well, you know, what do I need from the standpoint of, you know, equipment? What do I have to, you know, what do I need supply wise? What do I need, you know, exam tables, furniture for the waiting room, et cetera, you know, boards, all sorts of things that you're going to need in your office. So you can start thinking about that and start shopping that in this time period while you're waiting this, you know, 3 months or so for your PLLC to be approved. You know, you can start doing that kind of work, start shopping and figure out, okay, these are the places that seem to have the better prices. This is where I'm going to buy these things from. So you're ready to go and you've kind of thought through that whole process ahead of time. So, you know, once you identify the space, then, you know, let's assume that it's a move-in space. I mean, you know, it's just not complicated with all the extra work that needs to be done on a reconfig. You know, you have to sign a lease. You got to get the utilities into your name. You have to set up, you know, telephone, fax, you know, we're still using faxes. So, you know, those things are important to get set up. And that address on your, you know, for your location or locations is important, and it will be important when it comes time to do your carrier applications, when we get into that a little bit later. You know, also a good thing to start looking at this time is, you know, you've got to make a decision on electronic medical record program. And it's a good time to start doing that research now, pros and cons of each, not just what's easiest to use, but, you know, what are the interfaces for the billing protocol? Are you going to do your billing in-house? Are you going to outsource it? You got to try to find all those things out ahead of time, figuring out your costs and so forth, so that you have a little bit of an idea, you know, when it's time to buy and implement, and, you know, what kind of computer equipment you're going to need and so forth. A lot of stuff is stored in the cloud, obviously, nowadays. So you don't need, you know, massive computing power like you once did with servers in your office and all those considerations. You'll still need an IT company to help you. You know, maybe get wired, but install wireless in your office, you know, all that good stuff. So, you know, those are the types of things that you can start doing now. Another thing that you can start looking at is, you know, identify all the local carriers and, you know, national carriers that you want to participate with. So, you know, the whole participation discussion is, you know, can be a lengthy one, but I don't want to go into all the details of it, but I imagine you're going to have a pretty good idea at this time who it is that you want to participate with. Well, it's great to know where those patients, you know, visits are going to get paid from. It's also important to know, well, how much am I going to get paid? So I think it's a good time now to develop maybe your top 20 CPT codes. Find out for each of the lines of business you plan on participating with each carrier, you know, what is their community fee schedule? You know, more than likely, you're not going to be able to negotiate your own fee schedule. Those days are kind of long gone. You want to figure this out now so that you're not trying to determine this later. And if you make a mistake now of accepting an insurance that, you know, maybe there's, you know, quite a few patients with it, but the fee schedule is terrible. You know, you don't want to be having nights where you say, geez, I wish I would have went to work for McDonald's. You know, I mean, there's some, you know, some fee schedules that are just insulting. So, you know, that's a good thing to take a look at this point. You've got to engage your malpractice carrier. Let him or her know what you're doing. You're going to need a malpractice face sheet that evidences your coverage. That will be important when, you know, when it's time to, you know, file your applications with these carriers for participating status. So the next step, let's assume now it's the 3 months has passed. You've gotten your approval for your PLLC. The first thing to do, immediate step, you can do it yourself. If you have an accountant that, you know, you want to pay to do it, you could do that. Maybe your lawyer will do it for you, but you've got to get your tax ID number. So the tax ID number can very simply be received by going to, you know, the IRS website, look for form SS4. You complete all the requested information, you know, what kind of entity you have to, you know, at this point, you have to know how you want to be taxed and so forth. Let's just say for simplicity's sake that, you know, that it's a group practice of two providers. So, you know, it's two provider practice. You're going to apply for a tax ID number for a partnership is, you know, or maybe it's an S corporation, however you've chosen to be taxed. So let's say that, you know, you go through that process once you know what it's going to be for sure. And you can get your tax ID number, you know, almost immediately in most cases. One of the most important documents that you'll get once you get this tax ID number is a form called Form CP-575. And that form basically tells you this, you know, this is your tax number, your tax ID number for this entity. So, you know, once you have that, that's what you're going to report your income on from your business, your practice, and you'll use that for all, you know, payroll tax considerations, et cetera, when you're, you know, paying employees and so forth. So highly recommend that you save that CP-575, you know, electronically. You back it up and save it. Make sure that you have it saved. I would take copies of that original and save multiple copies of that. You will need to, you know, provide copies of that when it comes time to do the actual credentialing of your practice. So now you've got your tax ID number. You've saved your CP-575. The very next step is to hopefully you've determined which bank that you want to do business with. And, you know, some are better than others. One of the considerations in the banking end is even with a lot of payments coming, electronic funds transfer now, and, you know, patient payments coming via credit card, depending on the size and the type of practice that you have, let's say that you have a high workers' comp and no-fault practice, a high percentage of no-fault to workers' comp practice, you're going to be getting payments from all over the place. In that case, you want to have lockbox functionality. What's a lockbox? Basically, a lockbox is a PO box. It's your address where all the payments are going to go to, all the payments that are not EFT. So you want to do electronic funds transfer, EFTs, for everybody that you can. That makes the most sense, usually the cleanest way to do it. You know, that's typically what you want to do. So with your consideration of your bank, once you've decided on this bank, you know, then what you're going to need to do is you need to go open a checking account, business checking account. And then since it takes, you know, a couple weeks to get your checks, one of the things that you'll need on all your applications for credentialing is they want a voided check or they want a letter on the bank's letterhead from a bank BP that basically states, here is the name of the practice. These are the owners of the practice. Here is the ABA number, which is the routing number. And here is the account number for the practice. So that letter can be used in lieu of a voided check. Well, starter checks are no good. So the starter checks that don't have your name and address of the practice emblazoned on the check, those don't work. You can't use that. So it's either a check with all that information, a voided check with all that information, or you need that bank letter, as we just discussed. So one of the next things that you want to do is there's usually going to be this process of credentialing and contracting with these carriers can be lengthy. So, you know, you may not have your phone number set up yet in your office. So one of the ways to get around this is to establish Google phone numbers. So you can get a Google phone number that would, you know, you can say, this is my office number for an application, and then just forward it to your cell phone when the when the company calls, you know, when the insurance company calls you, you can say, yeah, this is, you know, Dr. So-and-so, this is my office number. You know, they want that. They also typically, not all of them, but many of them want the same sort of thing for a fax number. So you want to provide, you know, you could provide them a Google number, you know, that would go to a fax machine. And then, you know, sometimes they check it, sometimes they don't. And then basically you're just going to switch those numbers over to whatever your landline number is once you get your office open and you establish the service. So, you know, that's a kind of a little bit of a trick to, you know, keep things moving because you got to send in complete applications. If you don't send in complete applications, then, you know, life, this process just really gets, it really gets dragged out. So the next step that you got to take, geez, I think we're all the way up to step 8 or 9 here, is let's say again that you have a group. You've got to get your national provider identifier number, your NPI number for the group. So you got to apply to get your, you know, your group NPI number. I'm going to assume that you're already in practice. You have an individual NPI number. So, you know, you'll go ahead and establish that. Once you have that, you need your group provider number, your individual provider numbers, and that of the individual provider numbers, NPI numbers of whoever your additional providers are going to be. Let's say that you have some APPs working with you as well. You know, when you make this application with each of the carriers, you want it to be as complete as possible. And so, you know, the important thing is that, you know, you don't want to keep filling this, you know, this work out. A lot of the information is electronic now. It used to be paper for a long, long time. Some still are paper. You know, so, you know, that's an important function. If you're coming from another practice, you want to get your CAQH number, username and password from that practice. So now you could control it. You're going to need that. So, okay. So, you know, once you've, you know, established this, you know, your CAQH username and password, you have your NPIs for the group and all the individuals involved. Now it's time to go back to your list of all the prior carriers, you know, who you want to participate with. And you know, some of the things that you're going to need to make an effective application, you're going to need your medical license. You're going to need your CV. You're going to need your, you know, your DEA for prescription writing. You know, this whole process, typically a credentialing company is going to give you a list of all of the things that have to be provided with the application. So, you know, it's pretty extensive. So, that's a pretty good start on the stuff that you're going to need. Now, once the applications are prepared, you know, they've all got to be, you know, signed off either, you know, DocuSign, Adobe Sign, maybe wet signature in some cases. Really depends on your local carrier and how they handle things. You know, Medicare, Medicaid, I mean, that, you know, they're a little bit more old school. Although Medicare through its PCOS program has really made things a lot easier from the standpoint of managing your participating status, if you will. So this process, once everything gets sent out and sent to the insurance carriers, it's about a 2 to 4 month process. And, you know, one of the things that drives it is does anybody have to go through the credentialing committee? So the group itself needs to be contracted. So you're going to get back from the group. You're going to get back a contract from that group. You know, it's usually a 20 to 60 page, legal document, important for you to read the terms and conditions so that you know what you're getting yourself into, what you're agreeing to. Very advisable to have an attorney that's familiar in healthcare to read if they're reading these types of contracts all the time, they know what these carriers require, what is potentially negotiable. Rates are typically not negotiable. So it really depends though on your specialty. If you're a highly sought after specialist of some sort where there really isn't in the area, you know, you may have some power to get paid better than
their quote unquote community fee schedule. So there's special considerations for each, but you want to, you know, there are certain things that can be negotiated on these contracts that, you know, a lot of times people just don't think they're negotiable. So again, good idea to talk to an attorney and get some advice there. You know, the next thing that you really, have to do is, you know, you're getting set up to open your office space. You've got to talk to your insurance carrier to, you know, to make sure that you've got all your general insurance, to make sure that you're covered for, you know, accidents that happen, people falling, you know, all that stuff. So you need just, you know, you need your regular business insurance like any other business would need. Other things that you have to consider. I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail. You're almost ready to, you know, open your practice. We didn't talk at all about hiring. So I talked a little bit earlier, you got to make a decision whether you're going to, you know, insource or outsource your billing once you get it all set up. That certainly has a consideration as far as hiring goes. Smaller practices, you know, less than four providers, very easy for me to make an argument that they should be outsourced all the time. You know, there's just too much turnover. You don't want that one person in your office, if there's only one person or a half-time person's doing all the work, to all of a sudden become the most important person in the office, and the most powerful person in the office, I should say, because they control, you know, when that money's going to come in or if it's not going to come in. So, you know, but, you know, one of the things we didn't talk about was, you know, all the other employees that have to be hired. I mean, you have to kind of get, you know, you have to get all the other folks that you're going to need. You need medical assistants. You need a receptionist. You need an office manager. Is it that big? Who's the de facto person in charge when you're not there? What do you need from, I mean, how high of a credential do you need? Do you need a rent? Do you need an LPN? Is a medical assistant good enough? Really, I mean, you've got to make those decisions and get those people on board and ready to move so that, you know, you're opening with all the people that you need. So that's a little bit of a juggling act, but, you know, certainly something to consider. And like I said, it's in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 months is what it takes to get through these insurance companies, you know, including Medicare. Probably about 90 days, and many of them you'll get done in 30 days. But, you know, you want to open, when you open your practice, you really want to be, you really don't want to be turning people away. So, you know, this pretty much, you know, this podcast, I really wanted to, you know, focus on what it takes to, you know, get the practice, you know, started, all the legwork up front that needs to be done. Now, you know, there's really a lot of other things that have to happen. You know, once you get the practice set up, I mean, you got to, you know, you have to worry about, you know, how are you going to accept payments, credit cards. There's really a bunch of different considerations. And I'm not going to go into all that today. We've gone on long enough. So I hope this podcast was helpful. Please feel free to contact me at any time. You can reach me at 716-861-1199 or at my email address, tom@pracfirst.com. Thanks for listening today. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Med Practice Made Perfect.